Judiciary Committee and the Majority Leader Representative Minutes come forward. It's a pleasure to have both of you testifying at once. And as was pointed out in Willamette Week yesterday, one of the 50 most powerful couples in Portland here in front of my committee, you do us a great honor.
Senator, I'll defer to you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the courtesy. As you know, I'm still trying to dig myself out of a hole from 15 years from serving in the House. My conduct, but I appreciate the accolades nonetheless. Mr. Chairman, members of the House Judiciary Committee, I appreciate the opportunity to come speak to you today in favor of House Bill 2646. This bill is relatively simple on its surface, although I'm sure that you'll hear lots of different opinions regarding its merit. House Bill 2646 would simply escalate the assaulting of a public safety officer from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C felony. And in way of testimony, just a couple of statistics here, which may or may not be helpful, that there were roughly 2,902 assaults of public safety officers, police officers in Oregon during 1999. 342 of those assaults on public safety officers were assaults on Oregon State police officers. As a police officer myself, for approximately 25 years, starting in 1975 as a reserve deputy sheriff in Multnomah County and a Portland police officer and detective sergeant, having been assaulted numerous times in my career, I believe that the assaulting of a public safety officer should in fact be a felony, because I think that it's a relatively serious event. I do want to just point out by way of comparison that scratching a window or damaging TriMet property is a Class C felony in Oregon statutes. Assaulting a public safety officer is a Class A misdemeanor. In addition, you'll probably hear testimony regarding just the sheer number of incidents of assaulting public safety officers and the fiscal impact that might be associated with prosecuting Class C felonies. I want to remind the committee that under other provisions of the Oregon Revised Statutes, that a Class C felony can be treated as a Class A misdemeanor for purposes of prosecution based upon a determination made by the district attorney in the district attorney's filings or, I assume, in plea negotiations, should there be such a thing. So I would urge the committee to consider supporting this measure and supporting police officers, public safety officers in the line of duty, doing their jobs, being literally beat up and assaulted in doing so. I'll now defer to the Honorable Karen Minnis.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Karen Minnis, State Representative from House District 20. Just wanted to speak in favor of House Bill 2646. It's rather a personal issue to me to have a spouse come home that is battered and bruised and has broken bones and black eyes through 25 years serving on a public safety, in public safety as a police officer. I take this behavior seriously, and it's very concerning to me if an ambulance driver and a bus driver, the penalties for assaulting them are higher than a public safety officer. I think the message needs to be sent that if somebody's going to take it upon themselves to assault a police officer, that's going to be treated very seriously. I would encourage the committee to look at this issue and to look upon it favorably and pass it out. I appreciate the committee's time. I'll keep my comments brief, and we're open to any questions if you have any.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for either Senator or Representative Minnis about this bill?
I guess not.
No questions. You don't want to hear any war stories?
You have some you'd like to tell us, Senator?
That's okay. I'm sure there are a lot of people that probably have.
I know that there are a number of people signed up to testify in favor of the bill. I guess my this is my first time actually today having been able to see the fiscal impact statement. Have either of you had a chance to review that yet?
Mr. Chairman, I have not seen it, although I did speak with Mr. Lemon, who indicated to me that it would be significant.
It's not terribly significant in the 2001-2003 biennium, but in the 2003-2005 biennium, it becomes quite significant. And I won't bore you with asking you questions about what you think of the analysis since you haven't had a chance to see it. But I would like you, and I'll get you a copy before the end of the day today, and I'd be interested in any feedback either of you would have about the fiscal and any comments you might have, and any suggestions you might have about what we might be able to do to to shrink it if there are things that you think we can do.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll let Mr. Lemon speak for himself with respect to the construction of the fiscal impact, but I think that it's very important for the committee to look at the assumptions behind that particular construction, and I think you'll find that there's an assumption that the vast majority of these cases would be prosecuted as felonies. I'm not convinced, based on my experience as a police officer and working in felony cases, that that would be the case all of the time, because my experience has been that prosecutors tend to weigh the facts of the case and then try to either negotiate the case through plea negotiations or by their initial filing based upon the merits of the facts of the case. So, and usually in consultation with the officers involved, too. So.
Okay. Representative Shetterly.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
We've done this before. Has it fallen on fiscal? Is that where it's happened? Is that where it's fallen on?
More often than not, yes, sir.
Well, it just seems to me, weren't we just about to make riding a bus a Class C felony?
Well, it wasn't riding the bus.
Well, okay. All right. Riding the bus this time of fall.
Without
a ticket.
You had to not have the ticket in order to have it be.
I mean, I understand the fiscal, but somehow we've also got to get the policy straight here,
That's
too.
That's exactly right.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, just in our
Please. Case,
Mr. Lemon and I had a discussion recently because we've, over the years, been to some extent at odds over fiscal impacts relevant to the creation of new statutes that create crimes. And part of what I told Mr. Lemon is that it's my opinion that as a policymaker, it's my intent to try to create as many potential prosecutorial strategies in terms of looking at conduct and putting an appropriate criminal penalty associated with that in the statutes. It's not my belief that we should, in essence, prosecute every single one of those cases. And so that knowing how prosecutors' offices work, knowing that they don't prosecute every single felony as a felony, they oftentimes do prosecute them as misdemeanors, that we ought to look at the reality of that thought process when we're looking at fiscal impacts, as opposed to just simply taking them in the abstract and assuming that every single one of these are going to be prosecuted as a felony.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just again urge us, I vote on this thing.
Great. Thank you very much for being here. Representative Walker, Vicki Walker has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I was just going to respond to Representative Shetterly about having done this before, because I spoke to Mr. DeLashmet yesterday about the history of what happened to this last session, and so I think he's going to come up and give us a good explanation about that and why it got taken out of last session's bill.
Right.
And thank you for coming.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. I now ask Brian DeLashmet and Mike Van Patten and anybody else they have that they intend to have testify with them.
We did have a late arrival.
Good.
Amy Batten.
Amy?
Banta, excuse me.
Banta?
Yes, Banta. For the record, I'm Brian DeLashmet. I'm representing two organizations today, the Oregon Council of Police Associations and the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees. As was indicated, for those of you who were not in this body or on this committee last session, let me give you a little historical perspective of what has been done in this particular area over the last session. Last session, there actually was several bills. There was two clean bills that just dealt with physical assault of a public safety officer. There also was a bill, 2273, that dealt with assault of a public safety officer by bodily fluids. And if you recall, those two bills, after they came out of the Judiciary Committee on this side, were merged and went to Ways and Means. In Ways and Means, toward the end of the session, there was a discussion about which portion of those bills, that bill had the lowest fiscal on it, and what could we in fact achieve during last session and then come back with this session. There appeared to be, through the entire process, no philosophical disagreement with the idea of a Class C felony for both the physical assault and the bodily fluids assault. It just finally ended up in Ways and Means as a physical issue. So that's the history of that. That obviously brings us to this session of trying to pick up the other piece. I have with me two representatives of my organizations. They're going to tell their own individual story in their their own way about what's happened to them as far as assault. And I know there's a number of other people that are in the audience that are going to testify to their experiences too. But let me just touch a couple of points before I turn it over to them. What you found, and one of the issues that was raised as far as the physical was that the physical may in fact be very large. We ran into the same kinds of arguments about the bodily fluids, and Mr. Van Patten, I think, has some numbers he'll share with you, but what we found is that, in fact, one of the reasons that it is essential that this kind of bill get passed is that, in fact, it does have an effect to drive the offense in itself down in the future rather than the offense going up, the number of offenses and the cost going up. In the area of the bodily fluids piece, my colleague here tells me that the number of those assaults went down 69% after the passage of the Class C felony. So it, in fact, did accomplish what we intended to have it accomplish, which is less assaults by bodily fluids. We hope that this bill, by taking it to a Class C felony, would have the same impact. With that, I'll actually leave it to Mike and then Amy to tell their story, and then I'll answer any additional questions about technical about the bill.
My name is Mike Van Patten. I'm the Executive Vice President of the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees, representing four institutions in this county, and one in Tillamook Forest Camp. I'm also a sergeant at the Oregon State Penitentiary, 40 hours a week. Back in 1988, when I was an officer working the segregation unit at OSP, we had an incident with an inmate, and because of the incident, I had my skull dislocated from the top two vertebrae. Was off work for 4 or 5 months, couldn't walk for 2 months. Nothing happened to the inmate. Nothing at all. At that time, I had a newborn child. I couldn't hold him. Couldn't hold anything, couldn't do anything, didn't know what I was going to do with the rest of my life. I managed to pull through it, still have complications now and then, kind of like a bum knee or whatever with my neck. But you can't put a price on a bill that will affect people, especially when it comes to public safety officers or police officers. When they're out there putting their lives on the line, and you've got other incidences in the public that are Class C felonies versus a Class A misdemeanor. Like Mr. DeLachmitt said, I've got some rough numbers. Mr. Arminicus has better numbers from the Department of Corrections. At OSP alone, this is just OSP numbers, in 1988, there were roughly 64 staff assaults. 1999, after the bill, urine and feces bill was passed, the numbers dropped to 46, and as of this last year, 2000, staff assaults dropped to 30. A lot of those were urine and feces and spitting and stuff like that, so it did make a dramatic impact. Years before that, we were having problems at our institutions with the inmates setting the toilets on fire. So we started prosecuting the inmates downtown for arson inside a correctional facility, and since then we haven't had one. So the numbers will drop if it's put into effect. It shows them that there is something at the end of the line that they've got to pay for. And once they start getting prosecuted and see that there's going to be more time inside the institutions, it will stop. It's different than on the street when you have no control, but inside an institution with convicted felons, it does have a dramatic impact.
Good, thank you. I apologize. I have to step out for a brief moment to testify on another bill in another hearing room. Representative Wilson is going to run the gavel, so please, Ms. Manta, continue.
Good morning, sir. My name is Amy Banta. I'm a corrections deputy with Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. My story is not quite as powerful, but it has the same message. One evening in December, I was working on the booking counter when a female inmate struck me in the face. She only split my lip, but it was enough damage. The fear that I felt was enough to really bring home the job that I had accepted. Shortly after we secured her in a separation cell, we took a nurse in, a civilian nurse, in to check her for any injuries, as we always do in any situation where we've had to use any type of force on an inmate. As she was standing there evaluating this inmate kicked our corrections nurse in the stomach. Later on that same evening, my supervisor asked that we attempt to remove her from the separation cell and try to process her prior to the next shift. Immediately upon opening the door, she came out and struck another female deputy in the face. She was initially brought in on charges of assaulting a police officer. When we asked that police officer to return so we could file further charges, he came back and looked at our injuries and spoke to the nurse that she had kicked. He determined that based on us not being severely injured, it would not hold up in court. The statement that he made to me is that it was part of my job to be assaulted, that it was an expectation because I was a corrections deputy dealing with violent offenders that it was okay for me to be assaulted. I was not seriously injured that time, but I do know that every single day when I go to work, there's a possibility that I could be seriously injured. And I would like to know, or I would like to know that my family would have some sort of restitution if something were to happen to me. At this particular time, they do not have that comfort.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Vicki Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of three, and Ms. Banta, I'm going to start with you since you just finished your... I take pretty good notes, but I missed who it was that told you that it was part of your job.
A deputy, a road deputy that actually brought this person to the facility.
Told you that it was part of your job.
That it would not hold up in court.
Okay.
I was not seriously injured.
If I may, Representative Walker, that is not an unusual response that both police officers and corrections officers get. Sometimes from the judicial system, sometimes from other workers, but that's a very common response that we get.
Okay, thank you. And my follow-up question to Mr. Van Patten, and I think Mr. DeLashmitz can be able to answer this too. When someone, the person injured you so severely, you said that nothing was done to the inmate. Can you tell me why?
Because the district attorney doesn't prosecute Class A misdemeanors. And administratively, he was given a sanction. But as far as downtown, for what he did to me, nothing was done. He was still in population. One other thing to add, I forgot. Last year across the United States dealing with, I'm also the on the board of directors for Corrections USA, a national organization representing approximately 190,000 correctional officers across the United States. Last year alone, there was over 29,000 correctional officers assaulted in the jails and the state facilities, roughly one about every 45 seconds. Rhode Island put into effect, I don't have the bill that they did, the similar bill, which has shown that their incidences against officers have dropped inside their institutions also.
Again, if I may, Representative Walker, in answer to your question, another one of the responses, as Mike Van Patten has indicated, is that in obviously because the DA has the latitude to decide what they do prosecute and what they don't prosecute, in jurisdiction by jurisdiction, they are in essence freestanding. In some jurisdictions, they choose not to prosecute Class A misdemeanors. They believe their plate's full. So if, again, not unusual in one jurisdiction to have no problem with the prosecution, and in other counties, you may, in fact, not get a prosecution or have the DA pursue prosecution because it's the difference between a Class A misdemeanor and a Class C felony.
Okay,
follow-up.
How is assault defined? Is it going to be defined in the statute? Is it already defined in statute? Or are you going to define it for us so we know what level of assault?
Assault is defined in the statute in several different places. But assault of the type of the Class C felony assault that we're talking about appears to be a longstanding definition, and it appears in several places. This may be a good question to ask, actually ask the DA that's going to come up a little bit later.
Yeah,
but,
the chair just showed me he's going to be up testifying, so we can save that for the DA if you like.
It does appear, however, in this bill there's a definition of assault that we're talking about, and you can also look in...
But it's not very clear to me.
Yeah, in current assault in the third degree, it's under 163-165. It's basically the same definition.
Okay.
It's existing statute.
And then I had two more that came up. You mentioned that Rhode Island, Mr. Van Patten, is that the only other state that has a bill like this?
Well, it's we're opening the doors.
Okay.
Rhode Island was the first one where we got the copy of the draft legislation for the urine and feces. They were the first one to do it. And so we took some copies of it and through our organization, and there are currently seven or eight other states right now in their legislatures trying to pass the same legislation that I know of.
Okay. And then my last question is sort of a silly one, but I want to know how you can set a toilet on fire.
Well, what they do is they set a pillow over the toilet and pump out the water. It's a plastic pillow, and then put toilet paper in there, and we're setting them on fire. We don't get too many of them now also because it's hard to get matches because we don't smoke inside the institutions. Back then they had access to matches.
Oh, okay.
The relevance of that particular issue, and I don't know if you knew the connection, but the connection that Mike was trying to make in that case is, at least with incarcerated prisoners, once they see consequences for their acts, they in fact then do change their behavior. And that's another example in which there was another particular problem. And after those consequences, as there was with the blood and urine bill from last time, all of a sudden the behavior happens. And we would anticipate the behavior to be altered after the passage of this bill inside the facilities, too.
Thank you for being patient.
Thank you. Representative, Mr. Taylor, do you have something to
say? Representative, first, I want to at some point explain
sure.
part of the key issues in this bill.
Please.